Today's shiur is Masechta Bavasra Daf Kuf Samach Ches. We will begin on Daf Kuf Samach Zayin Amud Beis, five lines from the bottom. It says the Gemara, Ahu Tavra Davachosim Le'Ravim Rebbe Abba. There was a shiver, we discussed in the previous shiur, shiver is a receipt that a woman would write to a husband when she collected a ksuba. And here we had a shiver that Rav Yirmi Ba'aba was signed on to as a witness. Asla kamehi itasa, and a woman came, Amrale lava nohavoi, which means as follows. There was a shiver receipt written with the name of a woman on it. Rav Yirmi Ba'aba, and now this shiver was being presented in Beis Din with Rav Yirmi Ba'aba's signature as one of the signatures testifying to the veracity of this document. The woman, whose name appeared on the shiver, comes and claims, this is not me. I wasn't the person that got my ksuba and gave this receipt to my husband. So Yirmiyahu Abba said, Amra, anna amri luhu. I also, when we were writing this receipt, and I was signing this receipt, said to my colleagues, I don't believe that this is that woman. Ano nami amri luhu lav ihu, that this is really not that woman. Vamrali, and they say the reason it is that woman. Why don't you recognize her? Because mekish hu de kashala, the woman got older, ubagala kala, and when a person gets older, their voice changes. And that's why you were unable to recognize her. But it's really one and the same woman. And that's, so Rabbi Yirmi Ba'aba said, if that's what the people around here said, that's really that woman, and the reason I'm not able to recognize her is because she got older and changed, so be it. And based on that, he signed the document. And now the woman is coming and saying, it really wasn't me. Says Abayu, I'm Abayu. Even though we know there's a rule that kivin shehigat shuvei nechayzav magid, that there's a halacha that once somebody testifies, he can't change, he can't testify again. So once Rabbi Yirmi Ba'aba signed the document indicating that this was that woman, he should have no right to retract. Sumer rabbanon lav urchei lemedik. A talmid chacham is not typically careful and looking at women and knowing for certain, this is or this isn't that woman. And therefore, this mistake could be very well understood. How Rabbi Yirmi Ba'aba made this mistake. And therefore, we accept his retraction that indeed, perhaps, he signed this document incorrectly. The halacha of kivin shehigat shuvei nechayzav magid. Why is the halacha that way? That once you say testimony, you can't change. Machlokes rishonim. Some rishonim says, because the pasuk says, regarding Haggadah Seidus, regarding giving testimony, v'mayagid v'nasa avonai. So the Torah only speaks about one Haggadah, which means you only get one chance to say testimony. You don't get a chance to say testimony a second time. Another reason offered by the Rajba is because if a person offers testimony and then retracts on that testimony and changes the testimony, what he's essentially saying is that the first testimony he said was not true. And that means he was a liar. And we have a rule that ein adam meisim atzmai rasha. A person can't say that he said something untrue, and therefore there's a halacha kivin shehigat shuvei nechayzav magid. Obviously, the mefarshim say, what is the nafka mina between these two pshatim? Is where by changing the testimony, he isn't really declaring his first testimony as being untrue. So if we say it's a gzeir, it's a kosov, you only get one chance to say testimony, it doesn't make a difference if your second testimony turns the first testimony into being untrue or not. However, if we understand it, that it's only because you're making yourself into Russia, so only if your second testimony contradicts the first testimony, do we have a problem keeping shigat shuvei nechayzav magid, otherwise we don't. Interesting question. Mefarshim ask, obviously, the halacha should be kivin shehigat shuvei nechayzav magid. Because we know that that once you say testimony, you can't change. We know one of the concepts, discussed many times, is Edom Zayumim. If Edom come and say testimony, and other witnesses come and say Imanu HaYisab, and therefore you couldn't have possibly said this testimony because you were elsewhere, you're saying that this, you saw this happen in this place at this time, Imanu HaYisab elsewhere. So that's the parasha of Edom Zayumim. Ask the Mefarshim if the halacha would be that once you say testimony, you could still change your mind. So how could anybody ever become an Edom Zayumim? He could say, I'm changing. You know what? The first testimony, let's retract it. So answer the Mefarshim, it's not a ka. That's not the raya that the halacha should be kivin shogit shaveh nechazer magid. Why? Because when are Edom Zayumim declared Edom Zayumim? Only after Bezdin offers a issues of psak, only when the entire is over. When we say kivin shigur shaveh nechazer magid, obviously after the entire is over, you can't start again retracting your testimony, and that's when somebody becomes a zayin. The chiddusher is the kivin shigur shaveh nechazer magid is even before psak din kivin shigur shaveh nechazer magid. However, the Gemara says if we could understand the mistake, tzuvim rabbanan isn't in the habit of looking at women, and therefore he can't really tell that this woman who she was. We accept that explanation. First, we say, even though when we have these words, Suv Merabonin, many times in Shas, sometimes it means a young Talmud Chacham, sometimes it means an old Talmud Chacham, here it means any type of Talmud Chacham, young or old. Furthermore, the Farshim debate, if this is strictly a din to a Talmud Chacham, or anybody who we could legitimately assume was any time that there's a legitimate understanding of a mistake, the rule of Kivin Shigit Shuvein Chazru Magid. Furthermore, the question is, maybe it's only in this specific instance, where, as the Gemara says, Lav Urcha Lemedik, that Talmud Chacham usually don't look at women. But in other circumstances, we wouldn't accept any other excuse. Interesting question posed by Rabbi Chanan. The Gemara says here that it's not common for men, for Talmud Chacham, to look at a woman. So he asks, Eid Kedushin, it's a kibur under the chuppah to appoint the Eidim for the wedding. So perhaps we shouldn't ask a Talmud Chacham. Usually we ask Talmud Chachamim to have Eid Kedushin. Maybe we shouldn't ask a Talmud Chacham to be an Eid Kedushin, because he's not going to look, and he has to specifically look. So the Chanan says we shouldn't take the Gemara too far. The Gemara doesn't mean that Talmud Chacham is a person that's totally doesn't have intelligence. Of course he has intelligence, and if he pays attention, he knows what he's seeing. He doesn't always, and if it could be used as an explanation, as is the case of our Gemara. But if the Talmud Chacham pays attention, he's no worse than anyone else. Which leads itself actually to another interesting question, which is an interesting situation. And that is, we know that a kala standing under the chuppah usually wears a veil. And in certain circles, the veil is quite thick, and you can't see her face. Should her veil be lifted to see her face by the Eidim? The Mabit, the Tiras Chesed, say yes. Otherwise, how could the Eidim be sure that this is the Kala if they're being appointed to be the Eid Kedushim? The Avni Meluim says that there is no need for the Eidim to pick up and see the veil of see the face of the Kala, since they were invited to a wedding and they know who's the Kala at the wedding, and they see that's her family walking her down to the Chuppah. The fact that they didn't exactly see her face under the chuppah isn't necessary. Says the Gemara, "Who tarved av chosim le Yirmi b'Abba?" Again, we have a shayv that Yirmi b'Abba is signed on. Amalei, and again, the woman claimed, "Lava no havoi, it's not me." Amalei, Ivra antava, I'm certain that when I signed the shayv, you were the woman that got the ksuba payment. Amar Abaya, so says Rabaya, Avgav. That we just said, even though we just said the tzav merabon and lav urch lemedik, that a Talmud Chacham normally doesn't pay that close attention to women, even the dok. If he says he did, we accept that. And as the Mefarshim explained, the Chiddush of the Gemara is, we don't say that Talmud Chacham is oblivious. If a Talmud Chacham said, he paid attention, we assume that he did. Continues the Gemara, Amra Ba'aya, Haitzum Rabbonim, the Talmud Chacham, is going to be Mekadosh a wife. Nidbar Amaoritz Badei. He should take an Amaoritz along with him. Duma Mach Flamine. To make sure that the woman he's supposed to marry is the woman that he actually marries. It's interesting how the Magen Mishnah, the Merkavah Mishnah, explained the Rambam, who quotes this Gemara, Lalocha. The Gemara is saying that a Talmud Chacham who's getting married should take along the Amaoritz. To be able to make sure that this is, that he's marrying the woman he's supposed to. So the question is obvious, Memonavshach. If you're allowed to look at the collar, which is clearly what the Gemara is teaching us, so then the Talmud Chacham should look. And if you're not supposed to look, so what, the Amaoritz should do the Aveira, and he should look? So the way they explain the Gemara is as follows. The halacha is that you're supposed to look. However, since, as we've been learning in our Gemara, typically Talmid Chachamim do not look, so we have to deal with the reality. The reality is that the Talmid Chachamim, the Chassan, is not going to look, which is supposed to happen, and because that's the case, we should take along an Amoritz, who even though maybe normally looks, when he's not supposed to look, here he's allowed to look, because it's part of the mitzvah of Kedusha. We learned in the Mishnah yesterday, Kaisim Shtal Loiva, Apish Malva Imai. We write a shtar on behalf of the loiva, even though the malva is not there. Ask the Gemara, pshita, if the loiva is willing to undertake that he, no, I'm sorry, we skipped the Gemara. The baal nois mischar, we learned by a get, the husband's the one that pays for the writing of the get. My tama, dama kro, the cost of a nosan. It's the husband that has to give the get. To the degree that many mefarshim say that all of the implements that the cipher uses to write the get, the ink and the pen and the parchment, the husband has to take ownership of and then give to the cipher. However, says the Gemara, Ve'idna, the law of Dinan Hachi, nowadays where it's the women who pay for the getten, why? Says the Gemara, Shadju Rabbanan Isha, Rabbanan put the responsibility on the wife to pay for the get, Kikeicha de Lailishe, in order that he shouldn't be able to, the husband would delay giving the get. The woman's waiting for the get, so she pays for it in order that he shouldn't have an excuse to delay giving the get. Says the Yad Ramah. Again, it's not relevant in our times, but in the time of Chazal, when a get can be given bal karcha, when is there a din that the woman has to pay for the get? That's in a situation where she wants to get divorced. So Gemara is saying, pay, otherwise he may delay you. But if she's getting divorced bal karcha, she doesn't want to get altogether. Why should she have to pay for something she doesn't want? Interesting, Machloikas Ritva and Rambam. According to Ritva, the Gemara clearly is teaching us that really the one who should pay for the get is the husband. Just the Gemara has a new concern that the woman shouldn't be delayed, so she should pay. Why would be the halacha l'chatchila? Ritva says, avada l'chatchila, if the husband's willing to pay, he should pay. The Rambam disagrees. The Rambam says once the Gemara established that the husband, that the wife pays, even in a situation where it's not a contentious situation, the wife should pay. But now we have a very fundamental question. If we just, the Gemara we learned is almost contradicting one line from the next. First the Gemara says a pasuk, the cost of a nasan, that the husband has to pay. So how can we just ignore a pasuk and because of a concern, say that she should pay. So the answer is, Hefker Bez and Hefker. That Chazal have the ability to say that even though she's paying, it's as if he's paying. But that's a very difficult concept to understand. Because as we have discussed previously, when we speak about the concept of Hefker Bez and Hefker, everybody agrees that Hefker Bez and Hefker means that even though this Gemara belongs to me, Bezdin has the authority to say it's no longer mine. But does Hefka Bezdin Hefka have the ability to say, this Gemara which was mine, not only is it no longer mine, but now it's yours? Many Mefarshim suggest that Hefka Bezdin Hefka can't go that far. So even if we're going to use the concept of Hefka Bezdin Hefka here, to say that this money is not hers, how does it become the husband's? And therefore the Paiskim say, to avoid this problem in a situation where the wife is paying for the get, What has to happen is that she has to be makna, that money that's being used to write the get, to the husband, outright, has to be a kinyan, and then the husband, as I said earlier, is makna to the cipher, because otherwise it will never become his, and the get may be possible. Continues the Gemara, as I said, the Mishnah says, we write a shtar for the loiva, even though the malva is not there. Ask the mapshita. It's obvious that the loiva is the one that's gaining, and he should pay. Answers the Gemara, loitzricha beiska. We're referring to a situation that we discussed at length in the Masechta Bamitzia, where since the halacha is, you're not allowed to borrow money with interest, so there's the concept of heter iska, which really turns the loan into a business deal. So when is there a halacha that the loiva has to pay? When it's a halva. But here it's no longer a halva, it's an iska. So maybe there we should think that the loiva and the malva should contribute together to pay. Teaches us the Gemara, it's still to the loiva's benefit, and therefore the loiva pays. Kosher shtal ha-meicher, you could write a shtar for the meicher, abishan lekeich, even though the lekeich isn't there, we could write a shtar on his behalf. And who has to pay? So the Gemara, the lekeich pays. Because he's the one that's gaining. He's getting this piece of property. Again, ask the Gemara, obviously it's he who's gaining and should pay. Why does the Gemara have to teach it to us? Answers the Gemara, Tzrich v'meichel s'tevah ne'rasa. It's referring to a situation where a property that's being sold is a very inferior quality property. So really, who's the winner in this deal? The seller. So I would think that perhaps in this situation, the meicher should pay for the shtar, for the cipher. Teaches us the Gemara that it's always, in any real estate transaction, as poor quality the property is, the one who's getting the better deal is the lekeach. Answer, says the Gemara, en kaisen shtar re'erisin. So we learned in the Mishnah that en kaisen shtar re'erisin v'nesuin el medash shneihem. The chasen and the kala both have to pay. The chasen nosen schan, the chasen pays. Ask the Gemara pshita. And there's a machlokes rishonim how to understand the Gemara's question. One way of understanding Gemara's question is, obviously, you need the consent of both the chasen and kala. So what does Mishnah have to tell us, midash shneihem? It's obvious. Another way of understanding the Gemara is it's the chasen who becomes the lekeach of the kala. So of course the chasen has to pay. So why does the Mishnah have to teach us that the chasen pays? It's obvious. Answers the Gemara. Letzricha. The field suvim rabbonin. The nichle lechmul kreve. We're referring here where there's a great chasen. And the Mefarshim, again, with the two ways we ask the kasha, will answer both ways. Since it's a great chasen, perhaps we would assume that everybody wants this chassan. And you don't have to ask the kala. You get an opportunity to get such a chassan. The kala automatically agrees, we don't need her das. It's just a mission. You can't just marry off a girl without her das. And the other pshat is, that even though normally the chassan normally should certainly be one paying, but maybe in a situation when you have such a great chassan, the father-in-law should pay, even what the chassan is supposed to pay for, teaches us the Mishnah, no. The shtar erisin, the chassan has to pay for. En kaisen shtari rises the kablonis. We don't write a tenant, a contractor, or sharecropper. Again, both have to agree, and the sharecropper pays. Ask the Gemara Peshitta. He's the one that's getting the property. Answers the Gemara Letzrich Vabura. Machalek Shrishonim had to understand this teretz. Doesn't change really the concept. One is that the Mishnah is teaching us that, let's say, this is what Rashbam explains. We've learned many times they used to keep fields fallow. So let's say I'm becoming the sharecropper of a field, but I'm not going to be able, now it's the time when this field is being kept fallow, and I'm not going to be able to work on this field for a while. So it's not such a great deal. Still, I have to pay. Or, babura means that's a poor quality field. So here you would think that perhaps the sharecropper is not getting such a great deal, so why should he have to pay? Teaches us the Mishnah that he's the one that's getting the good deal. Furthermore, we learned in Mishnah, En kaisen shtar berurim el medash shneihem. They both have to contribute to the shtar berurim. And the Mishnah said that both have to pay. Ma shtar berurim. So what is the definition of shtar berurim? Hochet tevgim shtar tanasa. Where each party writes down his claims. Rav Yirayim zeh bar le'echad v'zeh bar le'echad. That many times the way the entire is conducted, as we will learn in Mitzvashem, Masechta Sanhedrin, Zablo, Zebar Le'echad, Zebar Le'echad, each one of us choose a Bayer, and the two Bayerim choose a Shalosh, So the chiddush here is that once it's agreed to and committed, we put it into writing, so people shouldn't be able to change their mind. Many Rishonim suggest that there really is no machlokes. Both pshatim could be correct in learning the Mishnah. And the Mishnah said that both have to pay for the writing of these documents. Interesting shaila that I saw is the Mishnah says that both litigants and the Din Torah have to pay for the Din Torah. What happens if I'm taken to Din Torah and it's a frivolous case and I win? Could I request in Beis Din the cost that I had in coming to Din Torah? We know in secular law, many times the courts award the winner not only whatever they award him, but they also award him his legal cost in having this Din Torah. So the Paiskim say there is no such concept in Halacha. If somebody calls you to Din Torah, you have to go, and really a Din Torah shouldn't cost money, because a Rav, that's part of being a Rav, and you could make your own claims. There's no need to bring a lawyer. You could be your own lawyer. However, there is a Rivash, interesting Rivash. The Rivash says that there is a case where somebody could demand his cost. If I called you to Din Torah and you refused to come, and I had to spend money on hazmonas and other things, that cost the Beis Din could award me that I laid out. So we learned in the Mishnah, a machloikis at the end of the Mishnah, where the Tanakhama, the opinion of Tanakhama is not obvious, but the Tanakh is obvious, it's not said. It says that we write one document for both. Rav Shimon Gamliel says we write two separate documents for the two separate litigants. Rav Shimon Gamliel Oimer, L'shnayim kos m'shnayim, l'zeh ba'atzmai, l'zeh ba'atzmai. Ask the Gemara, what is the machloikis of Tanakhama, Rav Shimon Gamliel, all about? Lema, b'koyf ramidah stoim kamifki. The machloikis is about, do we force people, well, I have nothing to lose, and you have everything to gain, do we force that? The mass suffer, kaifin, and therefore, the Tanakhama says, especially in those days, they didn't have computers, they didn't have copier machines. So every time a document was written, and you needed two copies of it, they had to be written out. So the Tanakhama says, why should we spend money on writing two copies? And therefore, one copy is enough. Shimon Gamliel says, and forcing me to pay for a separate copy is me to Sodom. Or Masava and Kaifin. Shimon Gamliel says, no, that doesn't have a place in Halacha. Says, well, right. The Kuram Kaifin. Everybody is in agreement that if it's Zed men of Azalei Chasser, Beis Din will not stand for it. What is the understanding? What is the Pshanim Shimon Gamliel and our Mishnah? Damalei, Leinichle, they'll have his Chusse Gabs Chusse. Doms like Arbe, which means as follows. Shimon Gamliel says that we said a moment ago, what does Shtar Berur mean? Shtar Tanasa, where everybody spells out their claims. So if there's only going to be one copy of this Shtar, your claims and my claims will be kept together. Shimon Gamliel says that I have a right to say, I'm not satisfied with this. Why? Because if there's only one copy, you will have access to that copy and I'll have access to that copy. And Shimon Gamliel says, I'm dissatisfied that you should be able to see all of my claims all of the time. You may know my claims, but having a document with my claims clearly spelled out will give you an opportunity to figure out a way of rebutting those claims. And therefore, here it's not Midas Sadayim. And therefore, Shimon Gamliel, just to read the words, by Nichli, I'm not satisfied to have his chusse gabes chusse, that you should have my claims together with your claims. The dumbest like Kai Rabbi, I look at you like a attacking lion, I don't want to give you that opportunity to be able to rebut me. So how do we understand the Tanakhama's opinion? So there's a number of ways of understanding the Tanakhama's opinion. They're relevant la locha. One way of explaining the Tanakhama is very simple. Where I'm saying, you know what, I don't care. I don't have a problem with you having my claims, and I'm not interested in reading your claims. So Tanakhama says, that's me the Sdoi. Another way of explaining is as follows. Very relevant la locha. Of course, everybody agrees that there's a disadvantage for me to have your claims and you to have my claims all the time and give you a chance to read them and understand them and prepare a case against them. But you have a case anyway, and I have a case anyway. So the Tanakhama says that you're really not gaining that much, or losing that much, rather, by having my claims. And therefore, spending the money, and as I said a moment ago, it's expensive in those days, it's better not to spend the money. Shimon Gamliel says, no. As soon as there's something to be gained by me not having yours and you're not having my claims, it's no longer me the Sadaim. So essentially, what are they saying? This story, Rabbi Zalman, the Ebene Ozel, understands the Gemara. What essentially they're saying is that the machloikis here is, do we say the concept of koifer amid sedoim, even when you have something to gain, where it's zeh nena v'zeh chaser, but it's only chaser, he's only losing very little. I'll explain it in a more practical shaila. I have a house, and you're my neighbor. And I want to build an extension to my house, because my parents want to move into my house, and they can't live upstairs because it's hard for them to climb the stairs. I want to build an extension. And of course it's legal, obviously. My extension won't bother you only to the degree that it may ruin your view a little. Do you have a right to say, I'm not agreeing that you should build an extension? According to Shimon Gamliel, according to our understanding of the Gemara, as soon as you have your chaser, as soon as it involves any loss, as minimal as that loss may be, the halacha is that I can't say anything. Whereas according to the Tanna Kamma, yes, you're losing, but the loss is very insignificant. You're making a claim would be considered midas sadai. Says the Mishnah, Misha par mitzvah chayvai. I owe you $1,000. We have a shtar that says I owe you $1,000. I pay you $500. So now we have an issue. You don't want to give me back the shtar, because if you give me back the shtar, then I don't owe you anything. I don't want you to hold the shtar, because the shtar says I owe you $1,000. So we make up between ourselves is as follows. This is the shtar. We make up that we're going to give a third individual the shtar. Vamalayin. I, the lawyer, tell that third individual. If I don't pay up the balance of my debt by a certain day, ten l'shtar, then he can give back his entire shtar. Give back his shtar. He gives mavloi nason. If indeed the date comes and I don't pay up, Rabbi Yossi amiyitin. Rabbi Yossi says that's what we made up. Yehuda amiloyitin. So the obvious question in learning this Mishnah is that it's ribbis. That according to Rabbi Yossi, we have a situation of ribbis. I borrowed $1,000 from you. I paid you $500. If at the end I don't pay when I made up, I'm going to pay you, and you give him back, and your shtar, my shtar is given back to the malva, and he'll collect the entire face value of the shtar. Why isn't this ribbis? So some of Farshim explain, Mishnah doesn't mean that I should pay you the face value. I only put you in a position that you get back the shtar, but I really don't have to pay you more than I owe you. But that's not posh pshat of the Mishnah. Posh pshat of the Mishnah is that you'll be able to collect the entire amount. Why isn't a ribbis? So the Rishonim explain, when is it considered ribbis? Ribbis is a situation for agenotar, as we learned from Sechba Mitzir, Perkeiz and Neshech, which means I'm paying you for you waiting to get your money. Here I'm not paying you for you getting the money. I'm paying you what I owe you, and if I don't pay, if I pay you in time, I won't have to give you anything extra. That's not called agenotar. So how do we look at the extra money? So I saw two ways that the Mefarshim look at this money. Some say what happens here is, it turns out to be a matana. That in our case, where I gave you $500 of the $1,000 loan, and then at the end, I didn't pay up the rest in time, so I have to give you $1,500. The first $500 aren't viewed as a repayment of the loan. They're looked at like I gave you a separate gift of $500. Others say that the $500 turns out to be a knas, a penalty for not paying you. So we had a machlokes. If I taka didn't pay on the right time, is the condition that I stipulated fulfilled? Machlokes Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. Says what is the basis of their machlokes? Says the Gemara, Rabbi Yossi sovar asmachta kanya. Asmachta means that I enter into a transaction that I never thought would happen. Here, you know why I said, if I don't pay up by a certain day, give him back the shtar? Because I was sure I'm going to pay up. Rabbi Yossi says that's still an asmachta. It's a fair deal. Yehuda sovar asmachta like kanya. Amar of Nachman, Amar Rabbi Ravu, Amar Rav, Halach Rabbi Yossi, then Asmach the Kanya. Kios l'kamei de Rav Amri, Amar l'vuchi me'achash Rabbi Yochim l'amdeinu, Pam Rishon v'shniya. If Rabbi Yochim taught us once and twice, the Halacha, Rabbi Yossi, on a ma'asa, how could we go against it? If Rabbi Yochim taught us, the Halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. However, says the Gemara, Vein Alach Rav Yosi. The Alach is not like Rav Yosi. The Alach is a smachta like Kanya. So Mefarshim, and this whole concept of a smachta, ask an obvious question. I said to you that if I don't pay up by a certain date, give back the shtar. Saying they really didn't mean it. Why is that not considered Dvarim Shebelev? The Dvarim Shebelev ain't a Dvarim. I never said it. I said give it. So the Shaar Yosher Shimon Shkop asked this question. And he answers that this entire concept that you can make a stipulation, that you can make a Tanai, is a Chiddush. That Tanai works. And therefore, Tanai only works in certain circumstances, and the circumstance of a smachta, the Torah was never mechadish, the Torah never taught us that you can make tanoim. Not an obvious question that all the Rishayim ask, is we have a very difficult situation here. Al Gemara is saying a smachta like Anya. On the other hand, I don't know how many times we had sugyas and shas that speak about tanoim, and stipulations being valid. So why is the Tanai valid and a smachta not valid? So I saw a number of answers in Rishonim. One answer is, what is the model? What is the source that we find Tanoim work? B'nei God b'nei Ruvein. So it has to be similar to the B'nei God b'nei Ruvein. And therefore it has to meet a number of criteria. One criteria that the Rishonim suggests is that by B'nei God b'nei Ruvein, it wasn't they who made the condition. It was someone else who made the condition. Moshe Rabbeinu made the condition. Here, I made the condition. A very chiddush to Guterres to say that Tanai that I make on my own is not a Tanai. So the simplest Teretz is that when they got up, Bnei Ruvein actually wanted to fulfill the condition. What was the condition that was said there? The Moshe Rabbeinu said, you'll get your share in Eivra Nor, provided that you go to war. And they were ready, they wanted to go to war. Here, the person doesn't want the condition to be filled. I don't want not pay, and you should give back the shtar. That's why it's very different. Another explanation is we have to look at the type of stipulation that's being made. If it's something that makes sense, like in the case of Bnei God Bnei Ruvein, it makes sense that a condition like that, if you want your share in Eivar Anor, Eivar Yad, and you have to participate with the rest of Klal Yisrael. So it's a sensible condition. Whereas a condition that makes absolutely no sense, unfortunately I wanted to pay you up. If I couldn't pay you up in right time, I'm forfeiting what I gave. That doesn't make any sense. That's why it doesn't fall under the halachas of Tanoim. Furthermore, the Rashbam and the Rishonim say that under certain circumstances, everybody agrees that a smachta is kanya. Where, if the smachta was made in Bezdin, then a smachta is kanya. Machlokas Rishonim, however, what is considered a Bezdin? The Rambam says, and then we'll discuss this more with Shem Masechta Sanhedrin, that a Bezdin means that they have smicha back in a tradition and a line to Moshe Rabbeinu, which obviously doesn't exist nowadays anymore. The Ran disagrees. The Ran says that any Bezdin Choshev can make an Asmachta. Furthermore, the Rishonim say that by Gittin V'Kedushin, Asmachta is Kanya. If somebody connected their get or the Kedushin to an Asmachta, the Asmachta will be valid. And there's a Machloikas Rishonim if an Asmachta is Kanya by a Matana. Maybe only by a halva or by a sale is the halacha smachta like kanya, but my matana a smachta is kanya. Says the Mishnah. Mishnah nimcha shtar chayvay. There's a shtar that I owe you money, and the shtar got erased. So there's a number of points to be made. The Rishonim say certainly if the shtar was erased deliberately, the dinim of our Mishnah would not apply. Furthermore, some Rishonim suggest that even if it wasn't erased deliberately, but I left the shtar at such a place where it could easily get erased, it's also in that category. Amish is referring to a situation where it is an accident. Furthermore, Machlokes Rishonim, what does it mean, Mishnim Chutzhtar Choyvon? Does it mean that the shtar was completely erased? Or does it mean, it's not that the shtar was completely erased, but the shtar's lettering is starting to fade, they're starting to get erased, and we're concerned that if we leave it the way it is, the entire lettering will disappear. So what do we do to avoid that we shouldn't be left with a situation of the shtar not being usable? So the halacha is, Mamadol of Edom, you should bring Edom that are able, that know what the shtar said. And here too, the Rishonim point out that an aid who says he knows what happened has to be an individual who knows how to read a shtar. You have to be an individual of enough of a Talmud Chacham and intelligent enough that reads the shtar and understands what the origins of the shtar says. Or Baruch Nei Bezdin. And these Edim that know what the shtar say come to Bezdin, Voyus like Kiyum, and they make a Kiyum, they certify the shtar, saying, Ois Pliny Ben Pliny, Nimchak Shtar B'yoyim Pliny, that this shtar, that this were the details of the shtar, the shtar started getting erased. Machloikus Rishonim, who is the Uplani and Plani Edom, and these were the Edom. Machloikus Rishonim, who are the individuals that signed the Kiyim? Some Rishonim say it's the Edom that signed the Kiyim, because they're the ones that are testifying what the original shtar said. Whereas other Rishonim suggest it's the Edom say testimony to Bezdin, but it's Bezdin that signs the Kiyim. I saw a interesting third shot, and makes a difference going back to something that I discussed a moment ago. It makes a difference if the wording of the shtar is still there, just they're starting to fade. In such a circumstance, then it's the Edom that signed the Kiyum, versus a situation where the Kiyum is starting to fade, where the shtar completely faded, and we're relying on the testimony of Edom that saw the shtar before it got completely erased. There would be Bezdin that would sign the Kiyum. Tan Rabbanan, is the Kiyuma. What is the Kiyum in such a shtar? Says the Gemara, what's written into the shtar is, the Mois of Tlosa Havina, we sat as a group of three Dayanim, on a Pliny of Pliny, Haitzi Pliny of Pliny, Shtar Mokhuk Lefanenu, this erased shtar was presented to us, Beyoim Pliny of Pliny, or Pliny Adolf. Then Kosovo, and if the shtar continues to say, Huskaknu Leidosim Shal Edim, we accept the testimony, Venimtsa Eidosim Mechuvenes, and their Eidos was accurate, Goiva. Then we could use the shtar. Vein Etzarach Lavi Raya. And afterwards, there is no need to bring a Raya on anything written on the shtar. We accept the shtar as it is. Vim Lav. However, if there is no indication of the details of the shtar, Tzarach Lavi Raya, that if somebody wants to collect with the shtar, he has to prove that the shtar is indeed a valid shtar. Nikra, if a shtar is ripped, and we're going to explain that in a moment, posel. Niskara, kosher. Nichta, nimchak, or nirtashtesh, if it just was sort of erased. Imrishum and nikr, if the original letters are there, then the shtar is kosher. Otherwise, it's posel. So Gemara quoted the Braisa that distinguishes between Nikra and Niskara. Ask the Gemara, Heichidami Nikra and Heichidami Niskara. What is Nikra and what is Niskara? Arav Yudha, Nikra means Nikra crash of Bezdin, that it was ripped obviously by Bezdin. Gemara will identify that in a moment. Niskara means that it was a crash Enos of Bezdin. It's not the specific type of rip that Bezdin makes. Heichidomish crash of Bezdin. What is the type of tear that Bezdin makes? Amar Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, Mokum Edim, or Mokum Azman, or Mokum Atarif. When Bezdin wants to invalidate a shtar, they take out the important elements of the shtar, which is the signature of the Edim, the date, and the tarif, which we always explain are the unique aspects of the shtar, the lover's name, the malver's name, the amount of money, etc. A bayomer, the way Bezdin would rip a shtar is not that they would necessarily look for all these important pieces of information and take them out, just they would cut it shesiv erev. If they would rip it with an X through the shtar, that makes it invalid. And in fact, that is the minig. The minig is that the way a shtar is destroyed is by a get. The minig is that a husband gives the wife a get, but we don't leave the get with the wife. What Bezdin does is takes the get and rips it. This way, we're making an X through it, and then gives a ksav that the couple is divorced. Says the Gemara, Hani avoid also Pimadisa. There were these Arabs that came to Pimadisa. And the king, the government, were very anxious
that to make them feel good, because they were the warriors. So what they used to do is, they used to take away people's property, but not only did they take away people's property, they knew that taking away property without having a deed is not going to hold up in court. So these Arabs were smart enough to demand that the people have to turn over their property and also turn over their deeds. Hani avoid the Oslo Pemedisa, that the Ansi Aris of the Inchi, they would take away people's property and their deeds. Also Mavis Lakameda Baya. So the owner of these properties came to Baya. Amma lay, and they said to Baya, Luxeman Shtari, look at our deeds, what the deeds stated prior to they were taken away from us. And you should write for us another deed that we should be able to have in our file, even though the original deed we have to give away. Because if these avoy take away our original deed, we will still have a backup deed in our files. Omalahu, so Abaya said to them, my Eved Luchu, what should I do? Domrav Safra, Ein Kaisvin Shtaris of the Sadachas. We'll discuss this more tomorrow, Shir. But what happened here, the halach is, we don't give a person two deeds on the same property. Why? The Matarif Ahadatarif, which means as follows. As we've learned, a deed doesn't just prove that I am the owner of a property. What a deed also proves is that if I bought a property from you, and then that property is taken away from me because it's mortgaged, if the deed has a chrayus in it, so then I have a right to take something from you or from anybody you sold property to. So the deed ends up giving me the power of collecting. If I'll have two deeds, and the Gemara will elaborate on this in Mitzvah Shema tomorrow, Shir, I may end up cheating and collecting from Lekuchas twice. So even though here we have a situation where I'm being mistreated and I'm losing my deed, not because I did anything wrong, it's just because these Arvoi came, still the Halacha does not allow two deeds to be written for an individual for the same property. Havakar Tardelei. And these people didn't let Abaya go. They kept on bothering him. We want you to write another deed. So Abaya didn't know what to do. So what he said was, Amle Lesafri, he told the Seifim that worked in his Bezdin, Zik Savluhu, go write them a deed, but write them the deed in a way that any Bezdin who would examine the second deed would recognize that it's invalid. What should you do? Write it in a way that Hu Alamachak, that the text of the deed would be on an erased piece of paper, the Edim Anayer, and the Edim will be signed on paper that wasn't erased, that we learned earlier now, Ms. Perik, that such a shtar is possible. Amle Rav Acha ben Yunai l'Abaya, the Dilma Rishuma Nika, maybe we're going to have a situation, and even though, as the Rishonim explained, it's far-fetched, we have to be concerned. So what we have to be concerned is that if you're going to write, if what's going to happen here is, you're going to write out a deed, erase it, and then rewrite it. And that's why the text will be considered that it was written on an erased piece of paper. We just learned in the previous braisa, the Tanya, Nimchak, in the Tashtesh, Im Rishuman Nikr, if the original deed is visible, it's a kosher shtar. So what he was asking Abaya was, your advice is very dangerous. Because how will we achieve having a text written? How will we achieve having the text written on an erased piece of paper? What we're assuming should be done is, write out the entire deed, erase it, and then write on top of it again. But we need to be concerned, says Rachman Ben Yumi, that when the person is erasing the original text, he won't do such a good job of erasing it. And if he won't do such a good job of erasing it, it'll be a situation of Rishuman Nikr, which we just learned that if Rishuman Nikr, the shtar is a good shtar. Of course she writes at Abaya. If the way you're going to erase this document is to write out the entire text and then erase it, you're in a very dangerous place, because you may end up with a shtar through shum and nicker, which is a kosher shtar. Don't write it out as a good shtar in the first place. Just write letters, and then erase them. So even if there'll be shum and nicker, there won't be anything to see. All you'll just see is a bunch of letters. And therefore, it'll be a situation, and do that only on the place where the text will be written, not where the Eidim will sign, which will be a possible shtar, and therefore you gave them a shtar, but they got nothing really. And in fact, the Ritva says, based on this Gemara, that if a Bezdin is, actually what's happening here is dishonest, that we're writing, the people here are asking for a deed to be written, but the deed is a meaningless deed. If Bezdin sees that they have no way of getting out of this person who's bothering them, has no way of getting out of the way people are bothering them, without doing something which is seemingly dishonest, they're allowed to do it. In fact, to the degree that I saw Ribzog Zilberstein quotes his brother-in-law, Ruchaim Kanievsky, that says, let's say there's a person that comes to your house, and he keeps on bothering you for tzedakah. He keeps on bothering you, and you don't have the ability to give him what he's asking for. You don't want to give him what he's asking for. And he doesn't let go. You're allowed to give him a check, and then sign your name in a way that the check won't be honored by the bank, because you had no choice, just like the case of Al-Gamar.